Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the December 8, 2016 Planning Commission briefing and work session. Before we start, I have an announcement. Pursuant to Code of Virginia, Section 2.2-3708.1, the Planning Commission adopted a policy for remote participation in public meetings of the Planning Commission. Commissioner Cliff Kearse has requested to participate in this briefing and work session meeting by electronic communication from a remote location that is not open to the public. Commissioner Kearse has stated that he cannot attend this meeting due to a personal matter. Specifically, he is traveling for business and will be joining the meeting from a location in Kansas City, Missouri. As required by law, a physical quorum of the Planning Commission is present in the boardroom, and the Planning Commission has made arrangements for the voice of Commissioner Kearse to be heard by all persons in the meeting location. Commissioner Kearse made this request within the time frame required by policy, and the county attorney has determined that the request meets the qualifications to participate remotely. The Planning Commission will record in its minutes the specific nature of the personal matter and the location from which Commissioner Kearse is participating remotely. Commissioner Kearse, are you still there? Please unmute us and then tell us if you're still there. All that work for nothing. Okay, we'll continue on. Our first item is disclosures. Commissioner Lloyd.
No disclosures, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Commissioner Lloyd. Commissioner Sisley.
No disclosures.
Thank you, Commissioner Sisley. Commissioner Jennings.
No disclosures.
Thank you, Commissioner Jennings. Commissioner Blackburn.
I spoke to a gentleman by the name of Jim Haynes from Falcons Landing regarding an upcoming application, simply to tell him when it was coming up before us. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Blackburn. Commissioner Campbell.
No disclosures. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Campbell. Commissioner Scheel.
Today I attended the meeting of the Waterford Citizens Association.
Thank you, Commissioner Scheel. Commissioner Barnes.
None.
Thank you. For my disclosures, on Tuesday, December 6th, I met with Bijan Katabini regarding potential applications in the Blue Ridge District and discussions around the Comprehensive Plan Stakeholder Steering Committee. Commissioner Kearse, are you there?
Your call has been forwarded to an automatic voice message system.
Cliff, thanks. Commissioner Kearse, we made a official announcement, and we are now in disclosures. Do you have any disclosures?
No disclosures.
Thank you very much. Our next order of business is the action summary reviews. I will accept a motion to accept the November 10th, 2016 action summary as presented. Is there a motion?
So moved.
Moved by Commissioner Campbell. Is there a second? Second by Commissioner Blackburn. Are there any changes, modifications, or deletions to the November 10th, 2016 action summary? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Commissioner Aye. Pierce? Thank you. The motion passes 9-0. Our next, I'll now accept a motion for the November 22nd, 2016 action summary as presented.
Accept the November 22nd action summary.
There's a motion made by Commissioner Sisley, seconded by Commissioner Blackburn. Any comments, additions, or changes to the action summary? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
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 Motion passes 9-0. Yes. I'm sorry? Okay, so you would like to, would you like to abstain or would you like to vote yes? Okay, the motion for that then should be changed to 8-0-1 with Commissioner Scheel abstaining. Thank you very much. Our first briefing item will be Special Exception 2016-0052, Goose Creek Village Animal Hospital. Mr. Schneider.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioners, one application, one public hearing item for you at your November hearing. This is Goose Creek Village North Animal Hospital, special exception. As you'll see on the vicinity map, the three stars represent the three potential locations the applicant is wishing to locate within the unbuilt buildings of the center. It's a 5,000 square foot facility, and we've recommended approval given the relevant district regulations and also the planned business land use designation. Several conditions have been recommended regarding animal waste and handling, noise, and limitations on outdoor activities associated with the use. We are recommending the commission support approval and be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Schneider. Are there any questions of staff?
I have one.
Microphone.
Thank you. The rightmost star, do you have a little more detail on where that is? Is that in the, what will be in our packet? Because that appears to be right on top of a Walgreens.
Sure, that's actually, the graphic here is actually a pad site, grassed pad site underneath the star. I believe the Walgreens right next to it. This is the Harris Teeter. These are the buildings right along Sicklin Road, yep, just to the north.
Anyway, so that would be behind the Walgreens?
Oh, yes, sir, behind the Walgreens. There's several, there are already graded pad sites. These are just unbuilt buildings of that center. So there's an empty pad site here and empty pad sites here and here. And the applicant is asked to be able to locate one of those three locations.
Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Jennings. Other questions for the applicant or for staff? Commissioner Kearse, do you have any questions for the staff on this item?
Nope, no questions. Thanks.
Thank you. I have one question, Mr. Schneider. So this is, they're going to put in one building. Is there, do we have the ability to limit the number of animal hospitals in this development to one? Or if soon as we approve this, they could put it on in any of those three, which is what we were, I'm sure, going to be happy with. But is there the ability to say they can only have one animal hospital in this facility?
Overall, no, sir. I mean, this is limited to one location. They could not have three at each of those sites. They could only have one.
One at one of those three sites. They couldn't have three. So if they wanted, if there was, so we approve it, they select I have the one next to the Walgreens. And then 2 months later, if they wanted to put another animal hospital in at one of the remaining two sites, they would have to come in for another special exception. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. That's what I thought. Okay. That's all the questions that I had.
Yep. Mr. Chairman, I do have one question.
Oh, yes. Commissioner Sisley.
Marchant, since these are pad sites, are there any shared walls with any other use or building?
I'll have to get a – there's conditions that talk about limiting noise with shared walls, so that's my assumption, but I can verify that for you for the hearing.
I'm just saying if there's not an opportunity for shared walls, then that seems unnecessary.
Okay. I can look that up.
Thank you. Other questions? Very well. Mr. Schneider, is that the last briefing item of the night?
Yes, sir. We can move on to work session items.
Great. The briefing is now closed. We'll now move into work session. Our first work session item is Special Exception 2016-0005, Special Minor Exception 2016-0001, SIDP 2016-0001, Commonwealth Center Mini Warehouse. Ms. Marsh, welcome.
Thank you. Today, the Planning Commission should have received updated elevations for the Commonwealth Center Mini Storage. These are shown here. The applicant has made the requested changes. They have eliminated the white banding that was on the top of the building, and they have also provided building materials for the elevations. Staff does support Planning Commission's recommendation of approval for this application, and the item is ready for action.
Thank you, Ms. Marsh. Are there any questions of staff or the applicant?
I have a few.
Mr. Kearse, please continue.
Yep. So, Jack, I have emailed you these questions earlier, so hopefully you've been able to find the answers. But I'm wondering if, in the past, if the staff has ever considered the effect of one application and what it can have on the visibility of an adjoining parcel, and whether staff has ever recommended reducing the amount of buffering or screening for an application in order to improve visibility of an adjoining parcel. And lastly, regarding the building, what is the height of the building and the height of the iFly building and the height of the Topgolf facility, if you have the answers to those?
Sure. The proposed building is 60 feet tall. That is the maximum building height in the PDIP district. The iFly building is 67 feet tall. The Topgolf building itself is 45 feet tall. And the poles for the netting on the Topgolf facilities are 150 feet. There was a condition of approval for those specs applications that the poles for the netting couldn't be taller than 150 feet. As far as the question on would staff look at how a proposed building would affect the visibility of another building, because these two uses are similar in nature, they're both zoned PDIP, we wouldn't look at it. We would think that it would be compatible with the building next to it. We wouldn't recommend less screening or buffering on any property, particularly this one. They are preserving trees that exist already, so we wouldn't recommend that the applicant remove trees to improve the visibility of the adjacent parcel.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kearse. Are there other questions of staff or the applicant? Seeing none, this is in the Broad Run District. Mr. Kearse, I'm not sure if you've received the updated motions. If you have not, we can have somebody else read the motions.
Yeah, I have my iPad with me.
Okay. Do you have a motion?
I move to the Planning Commission forward special exception 2016-5, SPMI 2016-1, SIDP 2016-1, Commonwealth Center Mini Storage, to the Board of Supervisors with the recommendation of approval, subject to the conditions of approval dated December 8, 2016, and based on the findings for approval in the December 2, 2016 finding work session memo.
Second.
Seconded by Commissioner Sisley. Are there any comments? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Motion passes 9-0. Thank you. Good luck. Thank you. Our next work session item will be FIDP 2016-0002, Loudoun Station. Welcome, Mr. Jewell.
Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Eric Jules. I'm a senior planner with the Department of Building and Development. I'm here tonight to present a final development plan for your action. Final development plans are a unique process that's mandated by the zoning ordinance. The only places where they're currently required are the planned development transit-related center, zoned land around the future Ashburn Metro Station. The intent of requiring a final development plan is to bridge the gap between the less detailed concept development plan of a rezoning and the more detailed, fully engineered site plans. They're intended to meet the non-engineered requirements of a site plan, such as location, proposed footprint, elevations, parking, traffic circulation, etc. The zoning ordinance states that prior to commencement of the development of the parcel, the planned development transit in the transit, I'm sorry, in the planned development transit-related center zoning district, the Planning Commission shall review and approve a final development plan. It further states that a final development plan shall be approved if it conforms to the approved proffers and the approved concept development plan and condition and contains the information required by the zoning ordinance for a final development plan. The zoning ordinance provides no discretionary authority to ask for changes or place restrictions on a final development plan. There have generally been very few final development plans in the county in the past. However, this is the third final development plan that the Planning Commission has seen in the last 9 months. The previous two applications were both solely related to the facilities for the future Ashburn Metro Station. While this application does include a commuter parking garage for the north side of the metro station area, it also includes a large amount of residential and commercial development, and it's all in this general area where the star is. The site's located within the Loudoun Station development. It's on the northeast side of the Dulles Greenway to the south of Shellhorn Road. If you're familiar with the Home Depot in Ashburn, it's just behind it. And the future metro station site is in the median just at the front of the property. This particular application is only on a portion of the Loudoun Station site. It's the highlighted section here. This portion is controlled by Comstock, who's the applicant for this application. The remainder of the site closest to the Greenway is controlled by a different developer, and at some point in the future, you should see future final development plans for their development.
Well, Mr. Jewell, I'm sorry to interrupt. Was that the Gramercy District that we
Correct.
Saw already?
Okay. Correct. Well,
because we've seen the Gramercy District already.
For a final development plan?
I believe we have.
Okay.
Maybe it was a transportation plan.
There are a number of applications going through, and they did have a zoning concept plan amendment
okay.
that was approved.
We were just confused because I thought we had talked about that piece in front already. So.
I had an item before you in June, I think, that was the metro facilities on the front part of the site in the Gramercy area.
That's what we remember. Thank you, Mr. Jewell.
Sure. This is an aerial from the spring of the current site. It's currently developed with the phase one buildings. It includes surface parking, 3 4- to 5-story residential buildings with first floor retail, which are these buildings here. 1 4-story commercial building right here that contains a movie theater on the first 2 floors and office space on the third and fourth floors. In total, the existing site has 357 multifamily residential units, 122,500 square feet of commercial and retail uses, which is first floor retail, and 51,925 square feet of office uses, which is entirely on the third and fourth floors of this building. The slide that's up now is sheet number 7 of your attached package, also labeled attachment 132, if anybody wanted to look at that. The applicant's seeking to revise and update the previous phase one final development plan to reflect the development that has currently taken place, as well as to add new phase two and phase three development, which once complete represents the full build out of this 26.4-acre portion of Loudoun Station. In total, including the development already in place, this application encompasses 924 multifamily residential units, just over 230,000 square feet of commercial retail uses, which would all be first floor retail, just over 460,000 square feet of office uses, which would be the existing buildings, as well as this building, and I'm sorry for not showing you the retail, the residential. The additional residential would be this building complex and this building complex. And also the large commuter parking garage, which would be this building right here. This is a cross section east to west through the project in three different locations. The top cross section is viewed looking towards the south from Shellhorn Road. These are the existing buildings that are on the site right now, and this would be the northernmost side of the two new residential buildings, although you wouldn't actually see them from Shellhorn Road as the current residential building is L-shaped and curves around in front of it. The second cross-section would be looking north from Gramercy Park Drive in the middle of the project, and this would be essentially looking at the opposite side of those buildings. And again, these are the existing buildings. And then the final cross-section is looking south from Gramercy Park Drive, again in the middle of the development, looking towards the Greenway. And this is the Metro parking garage and two future office buildings. And this is a public plaza. These two cross-sections run north to south. The first one looking east from Loudoun Station Drive, and this building is the office building, and this is the complex of the first residential building. And then looking from the second cross-sections, looking west from Metro Center Drive, and this is the Metro parking garage, and then the additional residential building. Staff has done an exhaustive review and analysis of the final development plan and has found that it complies with the requirements of the zoning ordinance, various proffers and concept development plans for Loudoun Station. There are no outstanding issues, and staff therefore recommends that the Planning Commission approve this application. This concludes my presentation. The applicant does have a short 2 to 3 minute fly-through video if the Planning Commission would like to see it.
That'd be great. Although we do have Mr. Kearse on the phone, so if you don't mind, as we go through the fly-through, if you could explain it and explain to Cliff what we're seeing. Just kidding. So. It's hard to press. There you go. You're good. Try it again. There you go.
I'm David Bryant with Comstock Development Service, the applicant for the property.
Thank you.
This video starts out, you're westbound on Shellhorn Road, and I still have fun with the architect on this because he's getting ready to make the illegal left turn down Central Station Drive. And you're seeing what Central Station Drive looks like today as you drive down through the existing buildings. Our very popular Blackfin restaurant right there on the corner. We're making the corner right between, making the turn right between Basil Leaf and Blackfin, and this is what you would see. Not necessarily the same skin. This was an early development of the property. Coming through the core area, or what we call the muse, it tries to show how these buildings will integrate with each other. The existing pool you can see on the left-hand side. This is kind of unique because we have the internal courtyards right there, and actually some of the apartments will have double-sided sets of windows on both the north side and the south side of the apartment. And now we're heading south on Metro Center Drive. This would be the main road that goes up and over the Dulles Greenway to the other side, to the Moorfield Station side. It's two garage entrances into the building from here. And then we'd be turning west on Gramercy Park Drive. And see the the Ashburn North parking garage to the left, and how it relates to the proposed retail and residential buildings on the north side of Gramercy Park. now crossing the movie theater on the right into the traffic circle at the Loudoun Station or at Central Station Drive and Gramercy Park Drive, and continuing on, the taller structure on the left is one of the future office buildings, and the one on the right is another piece of retail, first floor retail, and now we're on Loudoun Station Drive, headed back towards Shellhorn Road, and giving you some indication of what the project looks like directly from Loudoun Station Drive, going through the courtyard area between buildings G and A, I believe it is, and then coming through the Mews between Burger 21 and Famous Toasteries, looking at the building on the west side. And then heading south through the Mews, back towards Gramercy Park Drive. You have to excuse some of the background, though. And then the first real good view of the second office building that would be built on the south side of Gramercy Park Drive.
So at this time, I'd be happy to take any questions you have for Dave Wood as well.
Thank you. Are there any questions of the staff or the applicant? Commissioner Kearse, any questions?
No questions.
What did you think about the third car that you saw on the video? Any other questions for staff or the applicant? Okay, seeing none, this is a actionable item this evening, and this is in the Broad Run District. Mr. Kearse, do you have a motion?
Yes, I do. I move that the Planning Commission approve FIDP 2014-1, allows the station revised phase 1 and phases 2 and 3 final development plan Comstock. Based on the findings for approval included in the December 8, 2016 Planning Commission work session staff report.
There's a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Commissioner Blackburn. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passes 9-0. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Our next item on the agenda on the work session item is zoning amendment 2016-0008. Proposed zoning ordinance amendment to amend the revised 1993 Loudoun County zoning ordinance to establish new and or revise and clarify existing regulations in regard to the planned development town center PDTC zoning district. Welcome back, guys.
Thank you. Good evening, Mr. Chairman and members of the Planning Commission. I'm Brian Wegener with Planning and Zoning. I'm the project manager for ZOAM 2016-8 pertaining to changes to the PDTC zoning district. You had a public hearing on this item on November 22nd and forwarded it on to a work session to fully address the four outstanding issues that were identified by the Zoning Ordinance Action Group, or ZOAD. To quickly summarize those four issues, they pertained to the minimum separation distance between districts. There were four land uses that ZOAG wanted added that staff did not concur with. The third outstanding issue related to the percentage of civic uses required. And finally, the last issue pertained to the minimum required amount of pedestrian-oriented businesses based on block frontage calculations. So we're here tonight to help you work through those issues and to help answer any questions that you have on those or any other changes that we proposed. Thank you. Oh, I'm sorry. Mark Hassinger is here to represent the ZOAC.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Hassinger. Okay. I think what we should do, if it's okay with everybody else, we'll go through each item one by one. And if there's any other items outside of those, we can address those as well. So the first item, Brian, is the the distance, the minimum separation between town centers. So do you want to kind of lay down the staff's feeling on that and then the ZOAG's feeling on that? We can let Mr. Hassinger discuss.
Sure. Thank you. So currently in PDTC, it says that PDTC districts have to be at least 10,000 feet apart. And that is strange, but it's based on the comprehensive plan. The plan says that we should only have one town center in each of the communities, which are Ashburn, Potomac, Sterling, and Dulles. So the intent of that standard is to keep them at least 2 miles apart, basically. So that's where that comes from. We've heard from ZOAG that that's impossible to achieve. And so we proposed that that standard apply only to the core, and that it be possible to reduce it down to 1 mile where there are physical features that alter access, such as significant water bodies or six-lane roads. And ZOAG is okay with that approach, but they think the 1 mile should be reduced to 3,000 feet, basically.
Okay. Before we move on and I ask questions, I have one of my own, which is there a minimum size for a town center? Does it have to be 10 acres, 20 acres, 1,000 acres? Or can I have a town center zoning district that's the size of a 7-Eleven?
It has to be at least 30 acres.
30 acres minimum. So if I understand the request, we want to have a 30-acre town center, and the current zoning says that they must be 2 miles apart, and we're going to recommend that that be shrunk to 1 mile apart if there's some sort of stream or other physical feature that would delineate clearly that Town Center A and Town Center B are different. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. Okay, Mr. Hassinger, would you like to explain why 3,000 feet is a better number? If you don't mind, to put your microphone on. It's quite challenging. This is the first test.
Been there, done that before many times. So let me start off by saying that as we approach the entire kind of rewrite and cleaning up of the TC, we, with staff, used to talk about big TC and little TC. And so we think it's a bad designation calling it TC. The original intent was to make town centers, but we approach this more from a mixed-use district kind of scenario. And so we viewed most of the verbiage and requirements and standards from mixed-use centers as opposed to, you know, the more traditional name of a, quote, town center, which might connote, you know, a very large shopping center or whatever. The other comment that I would make, so that having set kind of the foundation, the other comment that I would make is that it really should be a market decision and not necessarily a geographic dimension of how far these are apart. If the market is already saturated with tenants that would occupy the next center, somebody's not going to come in for a rezoning to try to rezone something that's, you know, too close. However, if there's an opportunity for the synergies between an existing center and now another center that brings in different kinds of supportive retail, if you will, from the first center, then there shouldn't be what we think is an arbitrary boundary to say, hey, they need to be, you know, several miles apart. So that's kind of the basic thought process.
Okay. Can I ask a question? If these two centers were in Loudoun County, would they be considered town centers? The first one is Fair Oaks Mall. Is that considered? Would that be considered a town center if it was in Loudoun County? How about Fairfax Corner?
I can tell you the town centers that we have in the county.
Sure. Well, I think I probably have a good guess, but go ahead.
Oh, okay. Lansdowne Village Greens, One Loudon, Dulles Town Center, Cascades Overlook, Arcola Town Center, Waterside, and Dulles World Center.
Okay. So Fairfax Corner would most likely be considered a town center. I'm sure somebody's been there before. Mm-hmm. I know Mark has. I think we took a tour.
I would say so.
But then the Fair Oaks Mall would not be considered a town center because it's an internally focused area? Is that?
I would say that's a fair assessment.
Okay. Are there any comments or questions, Mr. Scheel?
Very simple one. Could you define the word synergy?
Sure. So, without getting too real estate terminology oriented here, if you had a center like Fairfax Corner, and that was oriented more towards food, restaurants, small shops. It was somewhat of an anchorless center, if you will. And that particular developer had a finite space of land created. That happens to be mixed use. It has residential. And now there were complementary uses to that. That has a movie theater also. And so if you had other, perhaps more recreational-oriented retail that could play off the movies, the programmed center, core center of that project, as well as the restaurants, my definition of synergy in that example would be they would be complementary. Someone would come to one center for a two-hour event and maybe then go eat in the other center or vice versa. Someone might shop in one center and then go for retail or experiential retail or some kind of entertainment. If those things were to work from a pure market standpoint, they would be better off being closer together, whether they were walkable, whether it was a short drive, than getting in your car and driving 3 miles away. Make sense?
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Scheel.
That will not make it into Webster's, but I think you did a good job.
Good thing you got a day job.
I think that was a compliment.
Thank you, Mr. Scheel. Other questions? Mr. Jennings? You were on. If Mark can do it.
It takes two hands. No, Michael. Give me an example of, because I read this verbatim, the planning and zoning is for a town center, and what you opened with is different than a town center. So perhaps applicant or staff can clarify exactly what's your impression of what this pertains to if it doesn't include a Fairfax or a Fair Oaks Mall. You said it doesn't really pertain to a Dulles Town Center. Give me some examples of what this does pertain to.
The purpose of this district is to achieve mixed-use, pedestrian-oriented environments. Something like the Village at Leesburg, for example, that's the best one that pops into my head. As opposed to, you know, some development that has urban density but without urban form, we're trying to preclude that with these standards.
in here.
Give me a couple other examples. I think Village of Leesburg is a good one. That's pretty clear and definable. What else?
Reston Town Center. That's a larger version. One Loudoun, of course. Cascades Overlook is really small, but it gets to the intent.
Mosaic?
Yes, absolutely. Mosaic District, yes, in Merrifield.
Okay, thank you.
Lansdowne, yes.
So, Brian, the way we started out, and actually the way Mr. Hassinger started out, was quite telling, because I always have a hang-up with the fact that we have this town center district, and we also have what's known as a PDMUB, a Planned Development Mixed Use Business District. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like we're defining the town center as a mixed use business district. So maybe we need to get the big guns out and ask Mark, but why do we have both of these, and tell me why I would want to select a MUB over a town center?
I'll take a shot first and then follow up. So again, kind of going back to my first comment, MUB was created to solve a particular problem in the county, and that really drove on the consolidation of parcels in the Route 50 corridor. And it became something that was to be more business-oriented, perhaps to have higher percentage of office, higher, you know, non-residential components. When we first got the assignment to look at town center, one of the first things we said was that the charge was really to look at how to make a more flexible mixed-use district work. And MUB is a little cumbersome to use, and so I think if you polled the land use attorneys and the developers in the county and they had their choice to use TC or MUB, and the ones that we just used as examples were all TC districts, that's just a little easier and less cumbersome to use. So we began the charge to look at mixed use districts, but we didn't like the name town center, because that connotes the Webster's definition of a town center. But there are town center districts in the county, and we can't eliminate that category. So we had to deal with the chassis of the TC district, but to try to make it more user-friendly, try to make it more flexible. Because, again, one of the things that, not to stress on the market so much, but one of the things that we struggled with is to try to get enough flexibility in a very changing asset class in the real estate world today. And so, you know, you didn't see things like Fairfax Corner 15, 20 years ago. You saw more enclosed malls. The enclosed mall is changing to be more open air today. You don't see as many pure big box category killer, large open air shopping centers. And so there, at least for now, is a trend to get more to the Fairfax Corners of the world, more to the Mosaics of the world. One of the first things we did when we formed the group was to go out and visit Mosaic and talk to the Fairfax County planners and zoning people about how that worked. And we actually got a tour from the developer, and they gave their kind of lessons learned about what worked in that section of the ordinance and what didn't. And so we had approached this from a slightly larger vision to try to make a more friendly mixed-use district. And I think I think the district, even before we got a hold of it, has been working reasonably well, because that's the one that developers and land use attorneys and applicants have been using to make applications.
I don't think I have a lot to add to what Mr. Hassinger said. And, I mean, I think we also kind of asked the same question when we got into looking at the PDTC. We did see a lot of similarities and even asked, you know, if we really needed both of those districts. But I do think, as Mr. Hassinger pointed out, we have those districts mapped. And I do see that there are those differences in focus between the MUB in terms of more business focus than the TC. There's also, you know, various requirements in terms of the PD MUB does have certain percentages for mixed uses to ensure that. I think the TC is more flexible in that regard. You know, density caps and so forth in the MUB where there are none that would be in the ordinance for the TC, that's basically left for negotiation through the rezoning process. So there are nuances between those, but there are a lot of similarities, I think, as well.
Okay. And apologies for kind of taking us off on that tangent. Are there other questions related to the item number one, the minimum separation between town centers, Mr. Sisley?
Yes.
I have a couple questions.
Hold on, Mr. Kearse. We'll let Mr. Sisley go first.
On the off chance that we might lose him again, let's let him go.
Okay. It's all yours, Cliff.
One question for Steve. Do we have any distances between from one PD MUP to another PD MUP?
No.
No. If we were to follow staff's recommendation and not make the distances smaller, which Joe, I would prefer, if there was, for example, Town Center A being built and Town Center B wants to be closer and be synergistic with it, it would still be possible. It wouldn't be, they wouldn't be able to do it by right, but they would be able to come in and request a zoning variance in order to build it closer. Is that correct?
Zoning modification, yes.
Yes. Okay. My initial leaning is I like the idea of synergistic town centers, and if they truly were to be built in concert with each other, it would make sense for them to be closer. The pessimistic side of me thinks that, well, in a lot of times in this environment, they may want to try to compete with each other, in which case you probably wouldn't want competing town centers right on top of each other. I think my inclination is to be a little more cautious and set the distance farther apart and have somebody come in and explain why they want it to be closer. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kearse. Mr. Sisley?
Great. I'd like to start with the definition that the county uses for transit-oriented, for the town center. And as I say that, a mixed-use concentrated community core, which will serve as a downtown for each of the four suburban communities. Town center will emphasize pedestrian movement over vehicular movement to create a pedestrian-friendly environment with a full complement of services and amenities. In the past, I would say 10 years, development has attempted to emulate traditional town centers. And the best example that I can give you is Leesburg. And the best example I can give you of a neo-traditional town center is the Villages at Leesburg. And that was approved by the town council, and it is in direct competition with downtown Leesburg. There are a number of reasons why it might be considered more or less successful in its competition, because the ages of the building, modern construction, the way that tenants make decisions about what property they're going to occupy, et cetera. But the distance between the Villages at Leesburg and downtown have nothing to do with the competitiveness of one of the properties or the other. A 1 mile separation seems, to me anyway, to almost nullify the purpose of a town center from the definition of the county. And that is for our pedestrian-oriented transportation rather than vehicular or mass transit-oriented transportation. I agree completely with Zoag's position that the market does take care of what's going to occupy where. You're not going to see a Bed Bath & Beyond in a town center, whether it's separated by a mile or 3,000 feet. You're not going to see a duplicate of that use. That's just not the way that those companies make decisions. They will look at a 3, 5, and 10 mile area, identify the population, what the average spending per household is, and that's how they make the decisions to come in. It's the reason why in the town of Leesburg, when we had the retail gap analyses that indicated that we had a lack of women's shoes, a lack of sporting goods, $110 million retail gap for alcoholic beverages, and a lack of supply, a really huge retail gap for hardware stores and other home-centric types of services, that Leesburg now has Dick's Sporting Goods, DSW, Total Wine, and the new Lowe's. So the market's going to make its decisions regardless of what the county decides the appropriate differences, distances between town centers based upon populations, average spending per household. And I would agree with Zoag's recommendation that closer actually helps the county from a number of different ways. One, it continues to embrace the pedestrian intent of town centers. And the best example I can give you is if you put a town center directly up to the Potomac River, and it's not physically possible to develop a town center in the middle of the Potomac River, it's not going to affect the success or lack of success of the town center because there's a geographic separator, natural geographic separator. When you look at Route 7, which is decidedly a geographic separation between different retail-centric developments, geographic separator does is make people get in their cars and drive to the next location. If you want to de-emphasize the use of cars, then you would remove a one-mile restriction and allow town centers to locate as close as possible. There is a concept in development and also in economic development within different jurisdictions that says aggregation is beneficial to the economy of the jurisdiction in question. Now, there may be a lot of people that would argue one side or the other, but in general, if you have, for instance, Katie's Alley in Alexandria, where all of these different designers have decided that they're going to locate because it is geographically advantageous, they are looking for exactly the same shopping demographic. And while, you know, designer A may not be the shopper's choice, designer B would, and it would be beneficial for that shopper not to have to get in their car and drive all the way over to designer B's showroom in order to do it. So I'm trying to offer to the balance of the commissioners here the rationale why a shorter distance and separation would in fact be beneficial to the county, and the market will make those decisions. If you have somebody who's dominating, for instance, somebody like I know we don't have a Cabela's here in Virginia. They don't operate here. But if you know sporting goods and you know that particular retailer, if you had a Cabela's that was dominating the area, you're not going to see Dick's walk in and put a store on the back side of that. Or if they would do it, they would offer a dramatically different product set so that there's no real overlap. The deciding factor is the cost of delivering that particular offering, and there are better market opportunities in other jurisdictions that don't have that sort of intense competition. So I'm trying to convince my fellow commissioners that there's real benefit to having to removing a one-mile separation and allowing aggregation of these town centers. I believe in the long run that the county itself and the taxpayers within the county would appreciate the additional commercial tax contribution that's created by this aggregation effect.
Thank you, Mr. Sisley. Let me be devil's advocate and ask the ZOAG question. If 1 mile is too far away and 3,000 is just right, why not have zero? Do we need any separation?
That was our original position. I'll make a compliment to staff and the ZOAG process. We've been trying to bring a negotiated position to the elected bodies and the appointed bodies to show how the industry and staff can work together. And so there have been compromises in the process. But truth be known, the original position of ZOAG on that particular situation was exactly what you said, zero separation.
Okay.
For the very reasons that Commissioner Sisley said.
I think he made some good points. Any other questions? Commissioner Jennings.
What is the residential requirement in a town center?
It's proposed to change. Let me find it so I can read it to you. Currently, it's based on land area of the district. It's at least 25% and no more than 50% can be used for residential use. We're proposing to change that to gross floor area. There is no density cap currently or proposed. Yes.
Oh, okay. I wasn't worried about the upside. I'm worried about the minimum. It seems to me, and I appreciate the issues about competitiveness, and I do think the market is efficient and it will pick. I'm also concerned on the other side, though, that this starts to, and I'm a little sensitive to some of the criticism, that this now begins to look contiguous and more like Eastern Loudoun. It starts to emulate Route 7, which is a series of shopping centers that are contiguous and very difficult to find the residential interspersing, and I don't think it is consistent with the original definitions of what the goals were in all of this. So I tend to lean towards the protection of a mile as a compromise, with the understanding that there could be, and well may be, exceptions, and I'd rather deal with it on an exception basis than kind of unchecked, see more of the development that I think is valid criticisms of the, it's just strung together. I don't think we want to see that through the county if we can avoid it, and not that that's the intent, but some degree of oversight and care through a special zoning amendment I think would be warranted.
Mr. Wagner, can you remind me again, the 1 mile that staff is recommending, it's just 1 mile, or is it 1 mile if there's some physical barrier?
If there's a physical barrier, yes.
Okay. And if there's not a physical barrier, then it has to be?
10,000 feet.
2 miles. Okay. Are there? I have
one more.
Yes. Let's do Chad, Mr. Campbell, and then Mr. Sisley.
Yeah, these distances, are they based on anything? I mean, I know I asked Mr. Stoltz this before about if there were any comparable other zoning districts or jurisdictions that did this, and, you know, at least we can't find any at the moment. But this whole thing just strikes me as incredibly arbitrary, and if someone someone looks for a rezoning, they have to come to this body and they have to go to the Board of Supervisors to ask for it. And if we feel that it's too close to something, we can turn it down. Right? Am I missing something?
Just to add, I think the 2 mile value, I think that's a fair argument that, you know, that number itself isn't special. You know, you really can't pin it to anything. The idea, though, that it supports is what is currently in the comprehensive plan, which is, as Mr. Hassinger noted, you know, the idea of the, you know, the downtown kind of town center, you know, one for each suburban community that forms that anchor. And so I think when this ordinance was originally created, that's what it was carrying forward.
But we're not doing that anymore with this.
I think that's the argument, and that's been the discussion that we've had. And I think even, you know, from a staff perspective, we've acknowledged in the process that, yeah, this is different. I mean, we're moving into these mixed-use nodes, not so much the, as I think Mr. Hassinger said, the big town center. They're potentially the smaller versions, and you may have more of them.
If our distances was based on a paradigm in the comprehensive plan that we're no longer using, why are we sticking with this paradigm at all?
That's another good point. I think probably the challenge we've had from a staff perspective is that it's the chicken or the egg kind of situation. We're waiting for the comprehensive plan to catch up a little bit. So I think prior to the comp plan vision being changed, and it's very possible that it will through the process that's underway, you know, this was a standard that was rooted in the comp plan as it exists, and our thought was that it would be wise to carry it forward until the time came that the plan changed and that it could be changed at that time. I'm sorry, John, go ahead.
I was just going to say, if I could add to that, the other component of this is just simply looking at these town centers from the planning perspective. They are to be somewhat complete communities, residential, commercial, retail, some employment, and standalone communities. And so there's a need to, from the planning perspective, not from the retail perspective or the market perspective, but to create distinct communities and maintain a distinction between them. And so if there's another way of defining that separation so that we have these downtowns that don't become one big continuous strip of retail core type development, then we would, I think we could accommodate that. I agree. I don't think we're leaning on the four communities concept of the general plan anymore, but we are still looking at trying to create distinct communities that have all the components and an environment or a design that creates a quality community environment, if you will.
I understand that, but I still feel like we're just pulling a number out of the air.
I agree. It's arbitrary.
And I don't like being arbitrary. I don't think that's good for government to do, is just be arbitrary. I don't like that. And if there's narrative which says, for example, in the plan, hey, we want you to do certain things, that's good and well. That's why the plan's a narrative, right?
I think when we went to the idea if there was a feature or a separation, a natural feature or a major road that was separating them, that could probably work. So potentially, One Loudoun can continue to work with whatever is being proposed on the Bluemont Nursery property now as a similar mixed-use project. They could be distinctly separate. If there's another way of defining that, then I'd certainly go that route. But it would be more logical, a more logical definition, if you will.
Mr. James.
Just to say again, the devil's advocate, if you're looking at 126 acres, which is the upside limit, right?
125, yes.
A modifiable upside limit. Let's keep that in mind, too.
Sure. Because if you string 126 and 126, you have about one space in between. So you're getting pretty close at the mile. At 126 acres, if you figure a 10 by 10, it's what, 225 on the side of an acre? The math suggests that you're getting, if they were built out, and I'm not saying they will all be built out by themselves, but in terms of arbitrary, 3,000 is very easy to put one overlapping on the other. So I think much has to do with, I agree that there is an arbitrariness to it, but the downside concern is the 3,000, frankly, is as arbitrary as 52. And I can point to how at the size we have, there's a point where it becomes ludicrous linking them. They're literally sitting atop each other. So I think the intent to find a different way to impart that intention of creating separability between them, but yet serving the individual needs and providing some differentiation, that seems to be more relevant. But I'm a little uncomfortable with, I think there are situations if we let it go the way it is, just with the number, I'm not sure that we're doing any better than if we leave it where it was. Now.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Mr. Sisley.
So a couple of issues that I would bring up. Number one, if you're saying that you're going to separate town centers by 1 or 2 miles under different circumstances, there's no language that indicates what the conditions are to approve a special exception for closer than 1 or 2 miles. So that's not identified at this point. And if you're going to make people go through a special exception, I believe you have to tell them in the language that we're implementing what it's going to take for them to move through, so that the application that is submitted is in fact relatively easy to determine whether it's in compliance or not in compliance. But that being said, that's just an opinion. I want to go back to the example that I gave you about Leesburg and the villages at Leesburg. Downtown Leesburg's traditional town center is well over 100 acres in size. And the common complaint of property owners and the tenants within the buildings is that we do not have critical mass. Now, there are a couple of different reasons behind that, but we don't have critical mass of feet on the street. We are surrounded by residential well in excess of 50% of the, to use the term that's currently being discussed by staff, no criticism, 50% of the floor plate. I like that. That's good. You got a nice hard number, and you're given kind of a fair and equal treatment to both the commercial and the residential side of the equation. But when you look at this from a practical implementation, I believe that what you're doing is you may be precluding the creation of critical mass for a neighborhood. I do not agree that a neighborhood, if you would, which is what we're talking about wanting to define and protect. I don't believe that Mosaic District can be considered the district that it is or seen as this definable neighborhood because of its separation from the surrounding areas in geography. It is a neighborhood because of what was delivered, this complete set of residential creating demand for services and shopping, and then the development and tenanting of the commercial side of it to meet the demand created by the residential. So that's the way that you create the neighborhood, not by the physical separation of the spaces, because if you take a look at Mosaic and the surrounding other developments that are there, it's very easily, it could be easily described as 1C of mixed-use development, even though it's taken place over almost a 50-year period of time, and Mosaic is the most recent contribution to that. I just think that if you're, I don't want to make too big a focus on the separation, but I also don't want to put arbitrary obstacles in front of success, and I believe that a 1 and a 2 mile separation between town centers may in fact work against the creation of success because you may not be able to get it with a 50% restriction on the floor area for residential. You may not be able to create enough critical mass on a 126-acre development in order for you to have enough foot traffic for those commercial components to be financially successful.
Thank you, Mr. Sisley. If there's no more questions or comments, I think what I'd like to do is get a sense of the board on this particular item, a straw vote, if you will. If you have comments that you would like it the way it is, the way it's suggested by the staff, the way it's suggested by ZOAG or something else, please provide a comment. So I'll start with Mr. Lloyd. Okay. That was a staff recommendation because your mic wasn't on. Mr. Sisley?
You
were pretty clear.
In support of the ZOAG recommendation for the 3,000 separator.
Mr. Jennings?
I do lean to our staff's recommendation, but I would like to eliminate the requirement for some separation barrier. I think a mile is a mile.
Okay. Ms. Blackburn?
I'm leaning toward ZOAG. One comment I wanted to make is we mentioned that these town centers are standalone, but actually I go to all these places and I don't even live in them. You know, I mean, I go to Village Leesburg and I go to One Loudon, and I happen to live right close to Cascades Overlook, which is a little tiny town center. And I happen to love the fact that my Harris Teeter is very close to my Target, which is very close to my Costco. It is made my shopping much easier because it's all right there and I get it all done at once. I know those others aren't town centers, but they're close. I do have to drive to the Target, but it only takes me a minute. So I'm leaning towards, I would go with zero because I think there's always some natural boundaries.
Thank you. Mr. Campbell.
Yeah, I don't think I can support any distance between them. I think that that's the decision this body should make. If somebody comes in for a rezoning and asks for PDTC on wherever they are, whatever the circumstances are, I think we should deal with it at that time on its merits. And
so special exception and...
Well, it's not a special exception. It's a rezoning. There's only a handful of parcels that are zoned PDTC. And if somebody else wants PDTC, am I speaking wrong here? If somebody else wants PDTC, they got to come in for a rezoning. And we can go, yes, no, you're too close, it's not going to work, or what you're proposing there is no good. I mean, we have the tools already to make that decision. And even if we do add this in, that could be waived as well. So I just see it as just fluff. It's not necessary. If somebody wants a rezoning, they'll come to us. We can make that call. So I don't support. I don't support any distance between.
So you're at zero.
Yeah, I want to take it out. Yeah, I think it's. I just think it's dumb. Sorry.
Thank you, Commissioner Campbell. Commissioner Scheel.
Staff possession.
Okay. Thank you, and Mr. Barnes.
I'm with this staff too.
Okay. Commissioner Keir, sorry, your comments.
Yeah, I'm inclined to go along with staff's recommendation until the revised general plan changes. The language in the revised general plan would support some type of separation, so I'm inclined to support staff's recommendation. And if we did have a second one that wanted to come in close to one that's already in existence, they can come in and request it and take a look at the application, and then, you know, that decision will be made at a later date. But for now, I support staff's recommendation.
Okay, and for the record, I would recommend a 1 mile with no distance, but it looks like the staff recommendation is what we're going to go with. So let's move forward and then go to the second item. Mr. Wagner.
Thank you. The second item pertains to land uses. So we're adding 51 land uses to this district as either permitted by right or special exception uses at the behest of ZOAG. What we did is we took all of the land uses permitted in PDMUB, PDTC, PDTRC, and PDTRC, and created this large matrix and basically synthesized those and came up with the proposed use list here that you have in the draft text. In addition to these additional 51 uses, ZOAG would also like to see single-family homes permitted by special exception in the core, many warehouse uses as permitted by right in the core and fringe. And in regard to that use, currently in PDTC, it's not permitted at all. We're recommending in the text that it be permitted by special exception in the fringe only. ZOAG wants it by right in both the core and fringe. ZOAG also recommends that data centers be permitted by special exception in both the core and fringe, and that wholesale trade establishments be a special exception in both the core and fringe.
Okay, let's kick it off. Any comments or questions? Mr. Commissioner Campbell, you get to start.
All right, I'll kick it off. I guess I'll just start right with here with the single family detached. That doesn't seem to fit to me, so help me out. What's the connection there?
The idea is if it's going to be a true mixed community, that you can wedding cake things down in terms of density, style of houses, and so the definitions that we're dealing with of a single family house, it's not going to be a 1 acre lot with, you know, with a big mansion on it. But if they're zero lot line homes and they're 55 and older component that becomes part of this mixed use community, a variety of housing types would be better than just singling out. So we're trying to do a mixed use community, but we're going back to Euclidean kinds of definitions on uses. And so if I can just expand while I've got you and then go back to others. So the idea here is to try to provide as much flexibility as possible. And Commissioner Campbell talked about every one of these new projects is going to be a rezoning. So you're going to have to make the case for the uses, for the use mix, for the density, for the stratification of different types of housing. And so using the old definitions in the ordinance and the perception of those definitions, we had many discussions on the data center side. perception of a data center in Loudoun County as this monstrous 150,000 square foot building that would certainly not meet the criteria, or 400,000, whatever the number is, it would certainly not meet the criteria for a mixed use community. But a supporting half of floor in the office building of the data center component of somebody making a car out of plastic in a lab in an office building is certainly something that you want in a mixed-use community. And so, again, we haven't yet tackled the definition section of the ordinance, but we're trying to provide as much flexibility with a ever-changing real estate paradigm that we want to be as flexible as possible. And so trying to stick with the Euclidean definitions of some of these uses we didn't think was flexible enough to be able to make true mixed-use communities today, and who knows what they're going to be like 10, 15, 20 years from now.
Okay. Thank you, Commissioner Campbell. Other comments? Commissioner Barnes?
Sorry. Commissioner James? No, sorry.
Commissioner Kearse, any questions?
No questions.
I'll make some comments, and I appreciate Mr. Hassinger's viewpoint on this and Zoag's viewpoint. But I guess that I'm a little nervous that the Planning Commission would be given way too much latitude to enable single-family homes in an area where, you know, well, it's only a 3,000 square foot house, so that's not so bad, because, you know, all the houses in Ashburn Farm, you pick a neighborhood, they're 6,000, so if it's only 3,000, then that's okay for the town center. And I'm not sure you could come up with a house that seems reasonable in that area. Same with a data center. I guess I would like a better understanding of, again, when I hear a data center use, it's a high percentage of a physical building that is a data center use. So is there a scenario where somebody has to come in for rezoning if I'm an accountant and I happen to run my own servers and I stick them in a closet, and that's the data center because I bought five servers and a little air conditioning unit for it, and I stick that next to the refrigerator, next to the coffee maker. Does that have to come in for a data center, or are we talking one building, whether it's 150,000 square feet times four, is what I meant, or a 10,000 square foot building, which, by the way, I'm not sure anybody's building 10,000 square foot data centers anymore. It doesn't really make sense. So can maybe staff get to me on the definition of the data center? Brian, maybe?
Sure, thank you. Currently in the ordinance, it talks about a building used for storage, management, and processing of digital data. It talks about equipment, systems,
but
servers.
Let's start at the first part. What was the first part of it? A building?
Used for storage and management.
A building.
Yes.
So it didn't say a portion of a building. It said a building.
I think what Mark was describing was an accessory use, so that would be treated differently.
Okay.
How would an accessory use be treated?
Well, it depends on the primary use.
It would just come
in. My question is, are you going to permit a data center, a tier one, tier two, tier three data center in a, for instance, a Walmart?
I don't see how that would be an accessory use, no.
Well, why not? A Walmart runs 24 cash registers. Those were cash registers. They're IBM 6483s that all run off of a local area network and a server in the back. I'm very familiar with this, if you're not sure. Is that considered a data center, or is that just considered part of the Walmart?
That would be considered part of the Walmart. Yes. You know, so that would be an accessory.
Is that because it's used only for the cash registers? What if they use that also to sell a space to a web hosting company?
that's when it starts, I think that's when the lines start to get blurred, and it becomes more challenging to make that decision, and we'd have to make it on a case-by-case basis.
What if my cash registers just aren't being used at night and I use it for a Netflix server, right?
Are you the same guy that runs the cash register here? That's the question.
Yeah, maybe.
Okay, sure, that's fine.
But I mean, I think that's a good point for Mr. Sisley to make. Mm-hmm.
At this point, just jump in. I mean, the industry, the data center industry, the communications technology industry is highly structured, well-defined, and it's broadly accepted, not just in this country, but all over the world. There are tier 1, 2, and 3 data centers that almost every major business has. This building has what is likely to be at least a tier 2 or a tier 3 data center. So if you're not going to permit, and if by definition, then your position, staff's position that they're trying to push forward here is that wouldn't be an ancillary use. This is a government center. They have a data center in it. Whether or not you and I would agree that to use the same description, I'm telling you the industry does. Tier 4 data centers and Tier 4 wartime data centers are what we are used to seeing when we drive up and down the toll road. These are multi-$100,000 buildings that are dedicated purely to rack space where different companies come in, and there are different versions of it. But I don't believe that you can preclude data centers as a use on of any quantity of floor space in the county because it's used everywhere. Now, if what you want to do is implement a code that says data centers in excess of X number of square feet, that's something that I could support, and I believe that it's defensible as is required for the county. It would rise to the occasion of being defensible if somebody were to challenge you in court. But the way that it is right now to say that data centers aren't allowed in a town center is you're telling every major business from a financial management company that might locate here, manufacturers, Jeff points out, any number of other uses that they can't have a large component of computing equipment mounted on racks and working in support of its organization.
Just to clarify, because obviously I wasn't clear, that what you're talking about would be permitted as an accessory use. If a business, the government center, any other use had a large, which is customary, a large data center component that is a part of its operation, that would be permitted. We would not be precluding that with what we're proposing. What we are suggesting is that a data center as a standalone use, as a principal use, that is not supporting an immediate business, it's not accessory, that would not be recommended within the town center. That would be the difference. Correct.
Okay. That's my comments.
All right. So single family, dwelling multifamily is permitted on both the fringe and the core. Single family attached is also. So is there any limitation on single family attached housing? Because, again, let's get into the When I have a view of a multifamily unit, it's a 1,000 square feet, 1,200 square foot condominium, high rise potentially, maybe it's a garden style, four story up a complex. But when you talk about a single family attached home, that could be the exact same footprint size. Or we have single family attached homes that are 4,000 square feet. So is there, when we talk about single family attached, are we talking about, you know, Mark can go ahead and build a whole bunch of 4,000 square foot townhomes that is supposed to be beneficial for the town center? I guess if you have a bunch of kid stores, because those are going to have a ton of kids in them.
There is no current or proposed limit on that. We have proposed to have maximum lot dimensions in the core in section 4806. For example, currently there's a 100 foot lot depth minimum, and we've proposed a maximum lot depth of 70 feet in the core.
So shorter townhomes.
Compact.
But I could still put a 4,000 square foot home, a townhome on a 70 foot lot.
There's no limit to that, yes.
Even if I had to go up five stories. All right. Comments? Other comments? Commissioner Jennings.
Can I go back to, you went over quickly, this list of uses, and I know we're talking a little bit about dwellings, but the five pages of special exception and permitted uses came from where?
We took all of the uses that are permitted in PDTC, PDMUB, PDTRC, and PDTREC, and basically made one list. We synthesized it all together. Just and were there any, flexible as possible.
Were there any inconsistencies between permissible or permitted and special exception in those?
What do you mean by inconsistencies? Oh, yes, there were. Between the districts?
Yes.
Yes, yes.
How do I designate that in here? Let me tell you where I'm going.
Okay.
This seems to be the union of all.
Mm-hmm.
And it's somewhat confusing, and I'll say inconsistent, where I can have a university but not a university with students, but I can have a a fraternity and a sorority house. So I'm trying to make sense of the logic underneath all of this and translate that into what this town center now would look like. Mm-hmm. Part of that has to do with the housing component, the residential on there as well. So maybe you could clarify a little bit, because it seems to be the lesser of all evils all kind of merged together.
Well, we currently, in regard to residential, we are proposing that there be between 25 and 50% of the floor area be residential. That's the only limitation there. In regard to the land uses, again, we were primarily just trying to be as flexible as possible and permit as many uses as we reasonably could to accommodate the market.
What did you exclude? Or
compared,
just took everything in.
We did not include everything, no. We didn't include some public utility uses.
Well, you've got pump stations, treatment plants.
Substation.
Right? Substation.
Water storage.
There were some that we didn't include, though. But I think that was it. I think that was it.
I guess that's also getting to me.
Mm-hmm.
A sewer pumping station. I mean, I guess you're going to put that in because it's a requirement of a big, large building. But I see a lot of these uses that I just, I mean, I'm glad that a crematorium is a special exception use. But do you really think a crematorium is an appropriate town center use? And I highlighted the dormitory, too. I think it's great to have the university, but no housing for kids, which, okay, great. But housing for a fraternity, I guess what's the difference between a fraternity house and a house for the university students or other than one has a lot more alcohol in it.
Yeah, and I think to clarify,
that particular use, we've addressed the college and university. There's the 50,000 square feet or greater as a special exception.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, any type of dormitory, whether that be a frat house, a sorority house, a standard dormitory, you know, for the university would be a special exception use as well. So it just was captured.
So it's a special, but okay. So it's a university and housing.
Correct.
Special, okay. All right, I'll give you that one.
Okay.
Commissioner Jennings, can I ask you a question?
Sure.
So this district requires access to sewer and water.
Mm-hmm.
Would you envision, obviously there could be a need for sewer and pumping stations, but in your experience, would you envision a need for a water treatment plant or a sewer treatment plant? Because that Loudoun, I mean, we could ask Loudoun Water, I guess, if they would ever envision that. But that, to me, yeah, well, I am at the moment, but I – those two in particular seem to me that they would never locate at a town center.
I agree. I would be stunned. I think either a booster pump station for water or a sewage pump station, both of which are easily camouflageable. there are some, I mean, was it more Cadillac? So, yes, they are. That I can understand, but not a treatment facility. It makes no sense.
How many treatment facilities are in the county? Do we know? Three, four, ten?
For water or wastewater? Yeah.
Sure.
But both. Okay, first off, this county buys the vast majority of its water from Fairfax Water. And the majority of wastewater is treated. It's shipped off-site, if you will, in Potomac Interceptor down to Blue Plains. So it's something left, maybe a fifth of the county, fourth to a fifth, is treated by not including the small community systems, but for the Eastern Central Service, there is one water treatment facility and one wastewater treatment facility.
Okay.
Excuse me?
Loudoun
Water's constructing this
system. Frankly, there's no water treatment in the county. It will have its own treatment facility for about 20% of the county residents. That's when the new plant opens. Thank you.
So, I mean, based on that, should we be removing some of these things? And I guess a utility substation, if you have a large enough town center that you'll need a substation, we're familiar with that, especially if you let data center uses in. And again, other than my Walmart that I would like him to, you know, run Netflix at night, maybe, I think I'm not a big fan of that one either. Does it make sense to remove some of these items?
Can I ask what an urban deck is? What is an urban deck?
It's a large bridge over a road like Route 7 that allows people to walk over it.
It's a pedestrian bridge.
Yeah, it'd be wide. And
it's different than a pedestrian bridge. It's like a pedestrian bridge, but wider.
Wider.
It's like Skyline.
It's not sidewalks on the side of the Aspen Village Boulevard Bridge. It's its own bridge, its own pedestrian walkway. Hmm. I think we're going to have one at Moorfield Station, are we not? I think we are at the Moorfield Station site.
Mr. Chairman, do we need to remove them? I mean, they're in all of these kind of objectionable uses are in a special exception anyway.
And I think with one exception, they're already permitted in the district because they're not underlined.
Okay. But you've asked us to review the zoning amendment, which I'm pretty sure means we changed some stuff and we only want you to look at that. I think it means we changed some stuff and we get to look at the whole thing. I'm just thinking. Mm-hmm. and if that's not what you thought, then too bad.
Ryan was just passing the blame for that one off.
I mean, I'm not sure what the other planning commissioners think.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Commissioner Blackburn.
I think If it's a special exception, we can leave it in, because I believe the whole purpose of this was for flexibility. And if we start taking everything out, we're not being very flexible. And if, like, for example, water treatment plant, you never know. We might need one, but it has to come through a special exception, correct? Same with the water storage tank. Same with the utility substation. I mean, let me go back to the crematorium. I don't have a problem with that. They are very quiet neighbors. I don't see that would be a problem.
All right. Please, Mr. Jennings.
I guess what I'm struggling the most with, just, and I think this, I understand flexibility, I get all of that, but it just strikes me that you kind of threw stuff in without much thought and care, because the very opening in section 4-801 provides the purposes as you've edited them. And I look at those to try to understand, what are we trying to do with the TC, with your new TC, and still provide flexibility. But when I read those, they're kind of clear. Vertically integrated buildings, close proximity, rectilinear streets, pattern streets, blocks arranged in a network, public-private streets, designed for automotive vehicles, public bicycles, and pedestrians. Now, I can go through it. I don't want to read these, but this, to me, telegraphs an intent and a concept, and I can understand it. Then when I look at the list of uses, I sort of get wrapped around the axle going, how does this goal that's stated sort of envision it? I appreciate flexibility, but it looks like they are worlds apart, and that's what I'm thinking.
Okay. Commissioner Kearse, do you have any questions or comments? Try the mute button. Is it still on?
That rattling mute button. Yeah, regarding to the special exception for single family, I'm kind of inclined to allow it as a special exception, because there, like, I think it was mentioned earlier, with zero lot line houses, you could build houses, you know, with very, very, very little space between them, which would almost be like a townhouse, but it gives the flexibility to say you're not sharing a wall with somebody. So that's something I think would be worthy of consideration, so I agree with that as a special exception use. I can't really get the grasp around the other items out there right now, but allowing single-family residential, I would consider.
Okay, so let's just cut to the chase here. I guess there's two items here. Number one, is there any desire by the Planning Commission to remove remove any of the existing items on there? That's the first question. And the second question, we should probably review the four items that ZOAG has as items. So that's single family detached as a special exception in the core. Storage mini warehouse permitted in both the core and the fringe, data center as a special exception in the core and the fringe, and a wholesale trade establishment as a special exception in the core and fringe. And before I start asking people, can I have a better or can I have a definition of the wholesale trade establishment? Is that Leesburg Outlets, or is that something different? The Odessa shop on 606?
It's not a retail facility. It's almost like a distribution center, I think. But
like a restaurant, what's that place called? Restaurant Depot, that they only sell to restaurants? Is that?
I think so.
So if you had a farm-to-market distribution center where people came in from the rural reaches, sell their wares, and they were loaded on trucks and distributed to restaurants, that would be a wholesale distribution facility.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. Why would you do that in the core? Okay. All right, let's let's go down the questions. I'll start with Mr. Kearse. Any changes to the current list?
No, I'm fine.
Then single family detached, special exception in the core, you said yes?
Yes.
Okay. Storage mini warehouse permitted in both the core and the fringe?
No.
Okay. Data center, special exception in the core and the fringe?
No.
Wholesale trade establishment, special exception in the whole, in the core and the fringe?
You know, I would say okay with special exception. I guess part of it is because I think wholesale trade could encompass a lot of potential different uses. So as a special exception, I could probably see it being acceptable.
Okay. Commissioner Lloyd, let's go down the list. Current list.
I'm just going to follow staff recommendation. I mean, I think we can get hung up here all night, and I agree with Mr. Campbell. This stuff will probably come to special exception, and I think once they redo the comprehensive plan, we're just kind of spinning our wheels here.
Okay.
So let me answer the questions.
Yes.
I'm in support of the current list. I'm in support of single-family detached by special exception. I think I can't support a permitted mini warehouse. I'm absolutely in support of special exception for data centers, and I would suggest that staff and ZOAG get together and refine the description for data centers above a certain number of square feet so that we're not seeing a ton of different applications because people can't understand what we're permitting and what we're not. And then a wholesale trade establishment by special exception in the core of the fringe, I can support that.
I'm sorry, can you say data center again? You said yes.
I did say yes, I support that as a special exception, but I'm making the recommendation to staff and ZOAG that they get together and put, I think that you have to put a cap on the number of square feet in the core or the fringe, right? If it's, the concern that I hear from planning commissioners is that they don't want a 400,000 square foot four-story data center in the core or the fringe of a town center. I think that's a valid concern. So if we're going to embrace that concern and articulate it, you have to start with a minimum above which you begin to operate special exception. So without that, you are, I believe, telling the industry a couple of different things, but I'll keep it on a positive note. One, that you're not going to let people have data centers, and the industry is well established as what they mean by data centers, tier one, two, and three. Four, there are two different types. And yes, there are jurisdictions that can trump our code. We've seen it already. But I think you need to wrap that with additional code language. The code language needs to start with anything above X number of square feet is going to be subject to special exception.
Thank you. Commissioner Jennings.
Current list. I'll leave it in anticipation of the comprehensive plan. I concur that I'd go through each and every line. I'd be messing around with it, and I don't know that that's valuable or useful.
Okay.
Single family detached, I can't support that in the core. Certainly can in the fringe.
Okay.
Mini warehouse, cannot support that.
Okay. Data center?
Data center, I cannot support that because I think we're in a slippery slope. As a condition of approval, if we wanted to finalize some size, I'd be okay. But right now what's in front of me is do I approve it or not? And I just think there's a connotation of what they are, and I appreciate that the server closet is not a data center, but I think until we clarify that, I'm just, it's risky and seems very inconsistent with what we're trying to accomplish.
Okay, and the wholesale trade center?
I can support that in the fringe only.
Okay. Ms. Blackburn.
On the current list, I would leave it as is. I think there's enough safety net there with them being mostly special exception or already in the plan. Single family detached, yes, I can support it by special exception. I would prefer it would be in the fringe. Storage mini warehouse, I would say the fringe. Data center, I would agree with Commissioner Sisley. It can be done with special exception, but I would like to see a cap on it. Wholesale trade establishment in the fringe.
Okay. Commissioner Campbell. First one is the current list.
Yeah, I'll go ahead and I'll just leave the current list alone since everybody else is. There's no point in being a lone vote on that. The single-family detached, I think, is a no for me. As a special exception in the core. It's already permitted in the fringe. Mini storage is going to be a no for me. Data centers a yes, and wholesale trade is a yes.
Okay, Commissioner Scheel.
I'll go with the staff in all but the wholesale trade establishment. I would be in favor of that in the fringe.
But not in the core.
Correct.
Okay. So that's no, 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 except for that. And Commissioner Barnes? Current okay. List.
Let's see. The only change I would like to make is mini storage special exception. Not
okay.
And in the core, fringe only. Wholesale in the fringe only.
Okay.
Data center, I agree with everybody else until we get a definition on how, what size and all that will be. But it says special exception anyway, we can control it. Single family, special exception, only in the fringe.
Okay.
That's it.
Yeah, I'm sorry, you, for data center, can you? Well, so it's adding it because staff's recommendation was not to have it. Okay. All right, for me, I guess I really do want to go through the current list, but I'm going to lose on that. So I'm going to vote no on the single family. I'm going to vote no on the mini warehouse. I would accept it as a fringe in the a special exception in the fringe. The data center, I just can't accept it as anything. And the wholesale trade establishment, I would be okay with that as a special exception in the fringe. So it looks like no changes to the current list. For the single family, I have five no's for the single families, so I think that's a no on the single family. For the mini warehouse, I have six no's completely, so a no on the mini warehouse. For the data centers, I have four no's. I have.
Do you have Commissioner Kearse's vote?
I do.
Okay.
Commissioner Kearse was a no on data.
And that, how did that end up? I'm sorry for interrupting you.
So four no's on the data center. I have one, two, three special exception uses, and two. Yes.
We all have five no's.
You had five no's on data center?
All of us did.
Okay. Then I guess I counted wrong. And wholesale trade establishment, since you guys probably took better notes than me, we have a yes on that. Yes in the fringe. Okay. So are we good? Okay. Two more left. Isn't this fun? All right. Mr. Regner, take us next.
Thank you. The current ordinance requires that at least 5% of total floor area be civic uses. We are not proposing any changes. ZOAG wants that reduced down to 1%. I would like to remind the Planning Commission that a recent ZOAM from just a couple of years ago changed this down from, it used to be a requirement that 10% of the land area be civic uses, and that got reduced down to 5% of floor area.
Okay. Do we have any comments, or do we just kind of want to go down the line? This seems like a pretty cut and dry. You're either in favor or not. So let's go with Mr. Kearse, unless you want to provide.
Yeah, I do have one question regarding using or considering outdoor space as civic space. And I'm wondering if staff's opinion on that is, I can see some outdoor type spaces that can be considered civic spaces. And an example I think of is at One Lounge, that central area to me is a civic space, but not an open space. Or if somebody just has an open park, that would be open space and not civic space. So I was wondering where staff lies on the use of outdoor space, considering that as civic space, or does it have to be square footage brick and mortar that you're looking for that would only be considered civic space?
The large town green in One Loudon meets the standard in section 4809A2, which says that you have to have a 1 acre town square. That's a completely different and distinct standard. And so our concern is that you'd be double counting these two requirements.
So your civic space has to be internal, has to be inside a building?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Does One Loudon have 5% civic space inside the core? Because I know they have a nice building down the street.
That requirement applies to the district, not just the core.
Okay. So their building that's a quarter mile away from the core meets their requirements. Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Mr. Kirsten, does that answer your question?
Yep. Thanks.
So where are you on that? 1%, 5%, or something else?
I'm sort of between, if it's going to be solely brick and mortar space, I can see reducing it to maybe 3%. I would like some outdoor type spaces to be considered civic space. Again, to me, a town green is quite a bit different than what you have in One Loud with the fountains and the bands and they've got the screen and movies. That is sort of really act as a civic space, as opposed to if you have a green space with a gazebo, that can be your town green, but to me that's truly not, that's open space, not civic space. But if we're going to go to only counting brick and mortar space, I think 1% is a little too low. 5% I think might be hard to achieve. I'm sort of in the middle of 3.
Okay. Even though it doesn't have to be in the core?
The brick and mortar space? No, as long as it's within the community, I don't think it has to be in the core.
Yes. Okay. Okay. Mr. Lloyd. 1%. Mr. Lloyd is at 1%. Mr. Sisley.
1%, not qualified. If you stay with the 5%, you had a 126-acre town center, you're requiring the town center to have 6.3 acres of civic space. Hard accomplishment. you know, if you're going to have a one FAR.
Mr. Wegner.
It's based on floor area, not acreage. Just to clarify that.
Yeah. So if you had a one FAR, that's when it works, right? Okay. You're going to require somebody with one FAR to have 6.3 acres worth of civic space. I don't know of a town center that needs that, or you know what sort of uses you would put in order to meet 6.3 acres of civic space.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Sisley. Mr. Jennings.
Along with Mr. Kirsten, that three seems like an appropriate number if it's brick and mortar, but I would stick with the five, but with the condition that certain outdoor spaces be considered and defined. I think they're preferable in many instances to a brick and mortar facility, and they become part of that concept of a town center, not an indoor basketball court. And I think we should strive to incorporate that.
What's our current outdoor requirements? We have a 1 acre at One Loudon, but what's the requirement specifically?
140,000 square foot town green.
Per town center core?
Per town center period.
Per town center area total.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That doesn't vary.
It's just one acre.
That's the minimum, yeah.
Okay. All right. Commissioner Blackburn.
I'm going to go with ZOAG 1%.
Commissioner Campbell. Commissioner Campbell is at 1%. Commissioner Scheel.
I'm at 5% because civic space can include a library, church, concert hall, and I think it's vital for the, I don't want to say intellectual, but the weather is bad in this area, and I think we need some indoor space for activities. Thanks. Okay.
Thank you, Commissioner Scheel. Commissioner Barnes?
I think I will go with 5%.
Okay. And yes?
Yeah.
Okay. And I'll go with 3%. So we have one, two, three threes, four ones, and two fives. So what does that get us? 1.75. Should we just average it?
Mr. Jennings, you were five, weren't you?
No, Mr. Jennings was three.
I'm fine with doing three if it helps us get to a compromise spot. I'm fine. What you want? 2.25? Give me 2.5.
I think the majority is going three. Why don't we just? I will go with three.
Okay, then it sounds like we're gonna compromise at 3%.
That's a good compromise.
Okay. Mr. Wegner, we have one more item.
Yes, we have one more item. The final outstanding issue pertains to the amount of pedestrian-oriented businesses. Currently, PDTC requires that 70% of all block frontages in the entire district be pedestrian-oriented businesses. The draft text says that standard only applies in the core, and it reduces it down from 70% to 50%. And we thought that was super flexible, but...
I'm sorry, 50% in the fringe? 70% in the core? Oh, it's 70% you're recommending down to 50
yes.
in the core.
Yes, and just in the core.
And in the fringe, there's no...
Nothing.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Okay.
ZOAG suggested that we exempt outdoor open space. We are exempting full block town greens, but ZOAG wants to exempt all plazas and open space. Our concern is that you could have grass between the sidewalk and the building, and therefore you wouldn't have to count that area toward that computation. And
Mr. Hassinger, you wouldn't do that, would you? Would you like to provide some commentary?
I can't possibly recall the number of hours and all of the calculations we did in discussing this, but we literally pulled up the blocks of Reston Town Center and counted, you know, the percentages of how some of those blocks ran. And we talked about mid-block connections, where Mon Ami Gabi is and where that goes in between two of the buildings. And, you know, that ups these percentages of animated streets, if you will. And there isn't a developer alive who doesn't want to animate those streets as much as possible. And the reason is retail pays more than office. And so you want to do that. You want to put more people in the streets. That gets you the higher rents for the restaurant spaces. You absolutely want it to happen. But when we did those calculations, we got blocks that didn't get to 50%. Backsides of offices, alleys where you're hiding storage and access for trucks. And when you have outdoor spaces like their plazas where people congregate and but it doesn't count towards the calculation of the number of linear feet of retail space, then the "I wouldn't do that" is on the staff side. And so, again, we spent a lot of time going through this, and we think it's reasonable to go down where we got to. Again, it's not worth going through and pulling up the Google Maps and going, you know, block by block. And that's a very high-density situation. And again, the whole flexibility issue of what's going to happen in the storefronts and the first floors of either residential buildings or commercial buildings over time. And today, you see a lot of kind of non-residential spaces in the first floor, whether they're kind of their internal health clubs, and it may only be for the benefit of those residents. That still helps to kind of animate the street, make it easier to be a walkable community, yet nth degree of the law, that wouldn't be calculated in this calculation. So, again, I don't want to take up too much more time in terms of trying to prove the point, but again, it becomes a bit of a market kind of situation. No one wants an unanimated street.
Thank you, Mr. Hassinger. Any comments? Commissioner Kearse?
I have a question.
Yes. Go ahead. Sorry, Cliff. And now we're left hanging.
Just.
Any other questions? There we go. You have us on edge.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, that just, so you know, periodically it just hangs up on me. I'm trying to get an understanding of what Zoeg's asking for. I understand staff is saying we've reduced from 70% down to 50% block frontage of pedestrian-oriented business. Is Zoeg saying that in areas where you have plazas or other types of uses, that percentage of block frontage would not be part of the calculation? Or are they saying there should be no percentage of pedestrian-oriented business block frontage?
Yeah, Mark.
Yes, it's just that would count towards the percentage.
So I understand again, so those other types of uses would count towards that 50%.
Correct.
In the block you have those types of uses.
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Kearse. Other questions?
That's the only question. Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? Yes, Mr. Campbell?
Yeah, Brian, what were you saying about the grass in the yard? What is, well, can you?
Oh, sorry, the example.
Yeah.
Yeah, my concern is that if we have, if we exempt open space or plazas, couldn't you have Mark just grass or something between the sidewalk and the building, and why not?
That's not the intent. I mean, if we need to reword this, but again, the plaza area, the, you know, it's not part of the block frontage, it's not part of the building, so you're not going to count it. Yet that may be the most animated people-oriented space in an entire block. And so it's not that we're trying to get credit for just if something's grass. We're saying we don't get credit if it's a paved plaza where there are programmed events all the time and people congregate there. That doesn't count. And so if we're going through and life is changing and there's a more secure kind of office building that you're not going to put retail on the first floor, and that doesn't count. But yet we have animated the blocks and the area with outdoor plazas, and that doesn't count. That's a double whammy. And yet we may have achieved the goal of the animated street.
A good example of that is the skating rink at Reston.
Mm-hmm. Or the fountain plaza.
The fountain, even the street in between, mm-hmm. Those two elements. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yes, Commissioner Jennings.
Using Reston Town Center, do you know what their requirement is, or can you reverse engineer it to figure out if this emulates what they have there?
Right. Again, from a regulation standpoint, their regulations are very minimal in the town center from that ordinance. It was incredibly simple how that got written and how it stood the test of time and it worked. We did reverse engineer and get to some situations where they weren't at 50%. Yet it is a fully animated, it works, that no one could have an argument with how that block turned out. And so again, I can't recall, you know, inch by inch of how we went through that.
Does staff concur that with the general concept, but we maybe need to modify the language, or do you just don't agree at all?
No, I mean, I think Mr. Hassinger does make good points. I think the staff's concern was that with, you know, the language, in order to make sure what Mr. Hassinger says is achieved, I think we would want to work with adding some clarification language to make sure that those plazas or open space are designed to serve as a pedestrian activity center, rather than just say an open space that's not designed to generate that type of activity. So I do think there's the ability for staff to maybe work on some language to make sure that is achieved so that it could be counted versus those areas that would not be counted if they're not designed in that manner.
Could I suggest or ask, there's no mention of civic uses or the outdoor or open space uses, but it would seem appropriate to Mr. Shields' comment that you put a library at Brambleton Town Center, that will be a pedestrian active storefront, basically, that we should expand this to include any use that provides that pedestrian activity.
Good point.
Several cities have libraries downtown that are pretty busy, and they have a combination of library building and plaza, so it all works. Yeah.
Okay, so is there concurrence with that? So what is staff's recommendation at this point? Do you want us to hold off and let you go do that and come back? Or do you want
to? That's up to the Planning Commission, I think. I think if you give us direction to, if your direction is for staff to refine the language to allow these types of open space plazas and civic use to be counted towards the calculation if language is developed to ensure that those spaces would function as pedestrian activity centers or whatever the right wording is, I think that would be fine as well.
Okay. I think that's probably what the Planning Commission is going to go for. Is there any Planning Commissioner that has any issue with the 50% number, which is a change from the current process? Okay. I don't either. So it sounds like we're in good shape here. Are you able, if we make a motion, are you able to move forward with what we've decided on notes rather than having to go through each individual item? Do we have a motion somewhere? We do. Mr. Sicily, this is a countywide activity.
It is indeed. And I apologize for having
that's okay. Here you go.
Ready. I need the microphone on too.
Move that the Planning Commission forward ZOEM 2016-0008 PDTC Plan Development Town Center Zoning District as modified by the discussion in the work session today to...
Wait a minute. That sounds good.
Hmm?
As modified during work session?
As modified during work session, the Board of Supervisors with the recommendation of approval.
There's a motion. Is there a second? Seconded by Commissioner Jennings. Any further comments? Commissioner Kearse, I'll let you go first.
No further comments. I'd like to compromise for the last item there. And if I understood correctly, we're going to let staff go ahead and write up that language, and it's not going to come back to us. They'll just clear up the language and move it out to the board. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. No other comments? All in favor? Aye.
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 Motion passes 9-0. And Mr. Merthew, that's the end of our work session items. Do we have any other items for a review?
Well, of course, just a reminder that there's dinner after the public hearing on the 20th. So if you haven't already told Nancy whether or not you're going to attend, please do so. Secondly, the chair announced at the board meeting, at the board briefing earlier this week, that they're going to take a position on last-minute submittals to the board in terms of setting a timeline for the chair and vice chair to consider deferring applications which do not submit all their materials or submit materials at the last minute, either the day of or a certain set date before the meeting. And I'd like to ask permission to go ahead and look at a similar position for the Planning Commission, where if we set some timelines for when material has to be in before the commission will consider an application, and the chair would have the discretion to defer it if it came in too late, that sort of arrangement. We are getting a lot of last-minute addendums at the board level, and I think somewhat at the Planning Commission level. Nobody's really getting a chance to look at it, and we're not deferring cases, so we do have a chance to look at it, and we'd like to stop that trend and move back to where we can all look at it and come to you with a real evaluation.
Does anybody have any issues with them doing that?
No.
Mr. Burns?
No, I don't have any issue. Generally, they do about 2 weeks prior to the meeting, so staff has a week to go over it, and then the...
It'll depend a little bit, and we're going to research that for the board, but it'll depend a little bit on what the material is.
Most of the Jewish
proffers would have to go to the county attorney as well as our staff, so that might take a little more time. Other material might be expected and not take any time at all.
A lot of jurisdictions have that.
Yeah.
And Planning Commission.
I think that's a good idea for the research and come back. I'm not sure that the Planning Commission needs to be 100% on board with exactly what the Board of Supervisors
right.
does, because it's a slightly different body.
Yeah,
I agree that there needs to be some sort of limit. We got documentation today for one of our work session items that, frankly, should have been here a little bit earlier.
Right.
Could have been here probably a little bit earlier. It didn't seem like anything had significantly changed between today and or the last meeting that we saw that item.
Right.
Okay.
Maybe as part of the January bylaws discussion, if we have any other things we want to look at, we'll do it at the same time.
Okay.
Thank you.
Any other items?
No, sir.
Okay. We're adjourned. Thank you, Mr. Kearse. Okay. We're adjourned. Thank you, Mr.